the headlines. Iran's leader highlights the significance of building good neighborly relations in a meeting with the visiting Turkmen president. The humanitarian organization says 4 out of 5 children in the Gaza Strip are suffering from mental issues caused by 15 years of Israeli blockade. And the European Commission launches legal proceedings against Britain after London introduced plans to override some post-Brexit trade rules. This is news. Thanks for joining us. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, says that his country's policy is to expand relations with neighbors, calling it the right policy. Ayatollah Khamenei made the remarks during a meeting with the visiting Turkmenistan's president, Sardar Berdi Muhammadov. He stressed that the expansion of ties in the interests of both countries, urging joint commissions to seriously follow up on the implementation of agreements. Earlier, officials from both sides signed over a dozen cooperation documents in different fields. The Iranian president, Ebrahim Raisi, and his Turkmen counterpart oversaw the signing ceremony. Raisi said that Iran and Turkmenistan enjoy vast capacities to boost their ties and pointed to Iran's determination to sign long-term strategic agreement. Raisi said the Tehran-Ashgabat cooperation would definitely lead to further regional development. Berdi Muhammadov, for his part, said that his country wants close cooperation with Tehran on issues such as the Caspian Sea legal regime. He also called for enhancing relations with Iran in international bodies. We reached out to Central Asia Caucasus analyst Omid Rahimi for his comments. He believes there are ample capacities that can help Iran and Turkmenistan increase the volume of bilateral trade.
Growth, 84% growth in the volume of trade exchanges in 2021. This is the outcome of trade exchanges by the two countries in different areas. Prior to this, the trade volume had hit a figure of $2 billion, so there are ample capacities for the growth of such exchanges. I can refer to the issue of gas. Iran, in order to meet its gas demands in northeastern part of the country, it has to import gas from Turkmenistan. The first gas export pipeline outside Central Asia was related to Iran in the 1990s, and it was at the time when Mr. Rafsanjani was the president, and there was another pipeline in 1388 Iranian calendar. It was laid in Khan, Iran, and it was used for transfer of gas to Iran. Turkmenistan, as a landlocked state, has certain limitations for the export of its gas. The recent agreements between Iran and Turkmenistan and the Republic of Azerbaijan have paved the way for other types of cooperation in this said area. That is known as the gas swap. During the visit by our oil minister to Baku, there was an agreement for doubling the volume of that gas swap. That is also an important area, and Iran can turn into a hub for the export of Turkmenistan's gas to other states.
The European Commission has launched legal proceedings against Britain after London introduced plans to override some post-Brexit trade rules.
This is illegal. The UK bill is extremely damaging to mutual trust and respect between the EU and the UK. It has created deep uncertainty and casts a shadow over our overall cooperation, all at the time when respect for international agreements has never been more important. That is why the Commission has today decided to take legal action against the United Kingdom for not complying with significant parts of the Protocol on Ireland, Northern Ireland.
The official said the UK's move to unilaterally change some of the Northern Ireland's post-Brexit trade agreement has no legal justification. The EU has begun 3 legal proceedings in response to what it claims to be Britain's failure to implement the protocol governing Northern Irish trading. The spokesman for Prime Minister Boris Johnson says that Britain is disappointed with the EU's decision. Britain maintains that its plans do not violate international law. On Monday, the UK introduced legislation which would remove customs checks on some goods entering Northern Ireland from the rest of Britain. London says the changes are necessary to improve trade and to reduce bureaucratic red tape. Britain's Prime Minister says that his government remains determined to go ahead with a controversial plan to deport asylum seekers to Rwanda.
But what we're going to get on and do, Mr. Speaker, is continue to take the tough decisions to take this country forward, and decisions that are on the side of the British people.
Boris Johnson made the remarks in Parliament the day after a flight transporting migrants was cancelled, following a ruling by the European Court of Human Rights. The government has been forced to fight a series of legal challenges in London courts. Early in the day, Home Secretary Priti Patel expressed disappointment over the ruling. The plan has already been criticized by rights groups and international bodies, with the UN refugee chief calling it catastrophic. The British government claims that it will help stem the flow of migrants via dangerous sea routes. The High Court in London has yet to take a final decision on its legality.
Hey everyone, Ali Reza here, back with another hashtag trending. In an embarrassing blow, the government of UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson failed in its first attempt to push ahead with the controversial policy of deporting asylum seekers to Rwanda. The UK was forced to cancel a flight carrying asylum seekers to Rwanda following a dramatic ruling by the European Court of Human Rights. Seven people were due to be deported by Tuesday morning, but the court issued a series of last-minute rulings ordering London not to remove them. The UK's deportation deal with Rwanda has sparked outcry among advocacy groups, which believe the plan is in violation of human rights. Many renewed criticism of Johnson's attempts to get rid of asylum seekers by sending them off to another country where their future will be in doubt. Our first tweet of the day comes from Rogers Atukunda. London, a first flight carrying asylum seekers to Rwanda as part of a controversial UK policy, was cancelled on Tuesday in an embarrassing blow to Prime Minister Boris Johnson's government. Over here we have another comment by Paul Conu. He said, it would be a colossal Trumpian mistake for Boris to take UK out of the European Court of Human Rights, which we helped found over highly contentious Rwanda migrant dumping plan. But Boris probably relishes being at war with the heir to the throne, masked bishops and lawyers, more Trumpian by day. Ed Wilson said, perhaps the Home Office's months of planning for transporting asylum seekers to Rwanda should have included an attempt to prove that what it's doing is legal under UK law, which won't be checked until next month, let alone international law. Sarah Jackson tweeted, the UK government's attempts to undermine the entire international refugee protection system by shifting their responsibilities to Rwanda were thwarted after an ECHR injunction. The power of the people, backed by a court, was stronger than the people in power. Other critics argued that the controversial deportation plan would not help decrease the number of asylum seekers in Britain, as London would have to take in one refugee for every asylum seeker it sends to Rwanda as part of the deal between the two sides. Our next comment says by Joan in France, Johnson and Patel are destroying the right of refuge in the UK, and like the PPE scandal, the personal protective equipment scandal, they are wasting huge sums of public money to move people to Rwanda, which is shameful on both accounts. Jay Prout said, the UK agreement with Rwanda is reciprocal. For every refugee we send to them, we have to receive one of their refugees in return. Don't think the majority of UK public and also members of parliament who are defending the policy are aware of this reciprocal requirement. Ken Noble said, while people out there we know are struggling to have both ends meet, especially those on low income and benefits, sending asylum seekers to Rwanda means UK borders are out of control. Need to put our house in order and scrap the Rwanda project. Elizabeth Munthing has our next tweet. If people are actually sent to Rwanda, history of genocide there, fragile peace, and harm comes to them in Rwanda, the UK's international reputation is finished. The Johnson government also came under fire again for refusing to even hear the asylum seekers' applications before sending the refugees away. Opponents called it a policy of hatred and hostility that not only divides the British public, but also violates international law. Our final batch of comments starts with a tweet by Elian Niraneza. Why is Boris and Priti so desperate for this deal to go ahead? Something's not adding up. This is how the genocide in Rwanda got planned. The UK at that time was hugely involved in the planning. This deal seems so wrong, but they are keeping pushing it. Who is behind this? John Napper said, it's not about governing Britain, it's about doing the right thing. Deporting asylum seekers before their case for asylum in the UK can be heard is wrong. Traffickers at least take people where they want to go and be safe. That's not Rwanda. Stefan said, when I look at Brexit and what that has done to the UK, when I look at the appalling Rwanda deportation policy, when I look at the NI protocol, all of these policies of hostility, hate, and division, one name comes to mind is a source of guidance, Steve Bannon. Kaz has our final tweet. Hard to blame the public for lack of trust in the immigration system when the government plans to deport asylum seekers to Rwanda without even processing their claims. Government is dividing the UK, shirking its responsibilities, breaking international law, and disrespecting and endangering lives. Well, that's it for another Hashtag Trending. Take care and bye-bye.
The humanitarian organization is drawing global attention to the worsening mental status of Palestinian children living under an Israeli blockade in Gaza. A fresh report by the UK-based group, Save the Children, says 4 out of 5 children in the Gaza Strip are suffering from mental issues. It warns that symptoms of depression, grief, and fear have risen dramatically in the past 4 years. According to the report, nearly half of Gaza's population of 2 million is made up of children who have never known life without the blockade. The group is calling the current state in Gaza more critical than ever, urging the international community to take immediate steps. Israel's land, air, and sea blockade of Gaza has been in place since 2007. It has also launched 4 main wars against the coastal territory, killing and injuring thousands. The most recent one took place last year. Ashraf Shannon is a correspondent joining us from Gaza City. Jahangir Muhammad is the director of the Center for Muslim Affairs, who joins us from Manchester. Welcome to you both. Ashraf Shannon, first over to you. Save the Children is highlighting this blockade. Give us a synopsis of that report and, of course, what you would like to add to this really inhumane blockade that has been going on now for decades, practically.
Yes, Kaveh, report by Save the Children has raised the alarm over the extremely critical situation of children in Gaza. Nearly 2 million people live in the Gaza Strip. Around half of them are children under the age of 18. Those children have been subjected to 6 life-threatening situations since 2007. First one is the inhumane blockade. And then you have the 2008 war, 2012 war, 2014 war, and 2021 war, as well as the COVID-19. It's very hard to describe the mental state of children in Gaza, those who lost their loved ones, those who lost their homes, and those who continue to face multiple traumas as a result of the blockade and the war, and the inhumane situation that they have been living in since 2007. Personally, I have raised 6 children under this inhumane situation, and as a father, I'm telling you, it's extremely difficult for parents in Gaza to deal with the mental state of their children, and also mental health providers are very limited in Gaza, and they are unable to cope with the huge number of cases in the Gaza Strip, Kaveh.
Jahangir Muhammad, obviously you have a first-hand account there from our reporter in terms of what he has experienced, which is probably emblematic of what others have experienced, and maybe even much worse because there are 4 wars included in this blockade that has taken place. Save the Children did a good thing highlighting it, but the question always when it comes to the Gaza Strip and the blockade is how can then this be brought to the attention of whomever at this point in order for this blockade to be lifted? And of course, that entity that needs to be pressured is Israel.
I think you've picked on the right point. This is not and the fact that they've written a report about it now. It should be obvious to any person or individual who knows anything about war and conflict and occupation that the people who live under such circumstances would not only have injuries but have mental trauma. And in the case of, not just the children, I expect the adults would be suffering similar mental trauma. And, we know from the history of slavery in the US that this trauma tends to be generational. And the Palestinians have lived in that situation for decades, and specifically in Gaza, this open-air, the world's largest open-air prison camp. The people have lived with that for decades. So, when soldiers, we see this every day now in Ukraine, when they cover Ukraine, the mental state of the people, what's happening, and they're very, very concerned about it. They show total sympathy. And yet we have the Palestinians here who suffer for decades, who suffer occupation, who've been invaded, who every day their properties and their lives are at risk and at threat. And yet nobody in the international community, apart from a few supporters, Muslim countries like Iran who support the Palestinians, show any concern or empathy to do anything about this. That is the real tragedy. It's not that we have a report. We have many reports about what's happening to the Palestinian people.
And with that, we come to an end for this edition of the News Review. Thanks for tuning in. And that is it for World News. Bye-bye for now.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
A highly embarrassed President Joe Biden, after wrongly claiming that he was committed to helping Latin America and the Caribbean recover from the COVID-19 pandemic, tackle irregular migration and improve living standards, had to sheepishly hear many of his counterparts from the Hispanic world lash at his lies. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Kahan International staff writer. This article is published under the heading U.S. Isolated on Its Own Turf. Stay tuned for more. Whatever is left of the plummeting U.S. credibility in its own geographical area took a further nosedive at the summit of the Americas Summit in Los Angeles, when even the attendees at the heavily boycotted gathering blasted Washington for its affront to humanity. A highly embarrassed President Joe Biden, after wrongly claiming that he was committed to helping Latin America and the Caribbean recover from the COVID-19 pandemic, tackle irregular migration and improve living standards, had to sheepishly hear many of his counterparts from the Hispanic world lash at his lies. Biden, who violated the charter of the Summit of the Americas by excluding the leaders of Cuba, Nicaragua, and Venezuela from the week-long gathering, thereby prompting the leaders of Mexico, Guatemala, Honduras, Bolivia, El Salvador, and Haiti to boycott the event, found himself isolated on his own home turf. Biden harping on democracy in the Western Hemisphere, despite the U.S. record of undermining and overthrowing elected governments in Latin America and all over the world, was challenged by Prime Minister John Briceno of Belize, who said, "The future of the Western Hemisphere is a question for all countries of this region, irrespective of their size, their GDP, and system of governance, in order to ensure a sustainable and equitable future. But isn't it inexcusable that all countries of the Americas are not here and the power of the summit dismissed by their absence?" He said the fact that any Latin American country not being invited to the summit of the Americas was incomprehensible, and in particular not inviting Venezuela was unforgivable. Briceno also criticized the decades-long U.S. economic blockade of Cuba. He was followed at the podium by President Alberto Fernandez of Argentina, who lashed out at the U.S. and called for a change in the rules that allowed Biden, as the host of the summit, to decide who was invited to the gathering. Earlier, Mexico's president, Andrés Manuel López Obrador, had slammed the U.S. for its policy of exclusion, warning Washington that it needed to change its desire to dominate the world. López Obrador, who turned down Biden's invitation to attend the summit because of the U.S. refusal to invite the leaders of Venezuela, Cuba, and Nicaragua, had made it clear there cannot be a summit of Americas if not all of the continent's countries participate. It is to be noted that U.S. officials had spent weeks trying to find a way to entice President López Obrador to the summit in Los Angeles, but failed. U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris could not succeed in persuading the leader of Honduras to come, while the leaders of El Salvador and Guatemala declined Biden's invitation. El Salvador's president, Nayib Bukele, would not even get on the phone despite frequent calls from U.S. Secretary of State Antony J. Blinken. This is indeed humiliation for the U.S. and a personal blow to Biden, who ought to realize that the days when Latin America was viewed as Washington's backyard are over.
Yani
Bazaar
Gathering around food is an ingrained part of almost all cultures worldwide. It's hard to imagine going to a wedding ceremony without its endgame dinner. Many celebratory and ceremonial events include food. Eating is not only necessary for survival, but also it is seen as a pastime and a way to get out with friends and family. For many, it is also a source of income. And the food industry is driven by the tastes of various customers, making it one of the most profitable industries in the world.
Hello again, and welcome to another edition of Bazaar. This week, we venture through Iran's food industry while shining the spotlight on baking equipment. We will explore the industry's national and international markets to get an idea of some of its significant activities. Also, we will touch on subjects like agriculture to understand its role in national food security. So, let's get started.
To familiarize ourselves with the types of equipment needed in the food industry, we visited Barak Industrial Company. With 40 years of experience in manufacturing, this company specializes in the mass production of machinery and equipment needed to bake bread. Some of these machines are pretty large and can weigh up to 7,000 kilograms, taking up large spaces in a room. This company has expansive production facilities with high output to manufacture such massive machines. Most of the raw materials for production at this company are purchased from inside the country. For example, the manufacturer buys steel sheets, wires, and plastic components from other manufacturing companies. It then shapes these raw items for the desired machine components in its production halls. This company employs dozens of people directly. It also offers training to its staff to keep up with the various new production methods and produce new machines.
In the food industry, competition is driven by high-quality food that comes in a diverse range of attractive products. Lucky us customers. The machinery used to make these items also need to be flawless to produce items that satisfy us, the customers. Consequently, companies expand their product lists to match their customers' varied tastes while introducing new items. So machines are essential to the ecosystem of the food industry.
As bakery businesses must adhere to food safety standards, the machines and equipment used to produce food products must match these standards too. Aside from food safety standards, these machines must be dependable with quality assurance.
If a machine fails, a baker may not be able to sell their goods, which reduces profits. For this reason, this company also follows manufacturing standards set by the National Bureau of Standards and International Standards for Production. Due to the high yield of this manufacturer, it not only supplies bread-making machines to domestic customers, but also exports its items. In addition to exporting its products to neighboring regions, it sends its items to countries in Europe, among other destinations. This manufacturer employs industrial engineers and designers to create various machine models. It has also generated numerous job opportunities indirectly. The company has often found a creative solution to the challenges it has grappled with over the years. Some include the availability of raw materials necessary to make its machines. Other challenges are optimizing its marketing strategy to find new customers to increase its reach. However, one of its major hurdles has been the US-imposed sanctions, which have hindered international money transfers, impacting global exports. Speaking of bread making, Iran is a nation of bread eaters. I'm one of them. In fact, official figures show Iranians consume some 160 kilograms of bread per capita. We better keep exercising. That's the highest in the world after Turkey. Many Iranian foods are meant to be eaten with bread on the side. So, Iran produces massive amounts of bread daily to supply this domestic demand. Based on figures from Iran's Bread Association, industrial-scale bread making holds 20% of the market and is mainly handled by machines. However, locally known as naan, traditional bread has more demand and is usually baked in tailored ovens. Around 80% of flour distributed nationwide used to be government-subsidized until this year. Meaning the government was providing part of the costs for flour to be sold at lower prices in the market. One of the reasons for removing subsidies is said to prevent people from smuggling wheat and flour out of the country. On another note, flour is also used in many other foods, which the country also exports. For example, biscuits, confections, and so forth are made in large quantities with a production capacity of around 2.5 million tons annually. That is going off of figures from the National Biscuit, Confectionery and Chocolate Producers Association. In 2019, exports stood at $800 million, and in 2020, this figure dropped to around $450 million. Industry participants say this decline was mainly due to the onset of the coronavirus pandemic. Recent figures have not been published yet. The food and beverage industry is probably the most important part of the country's economy, accounting for over 20% of Iran's non-oil revenues. That's according to the National Chamber of Commerce.
Nearly all food products produced in Iran are made from raw materials from domestic agricultural cultivation. That is why Iran has a very robust agricultural industry. However, agriculture is not admitted to farming alone. It also includes dairy, poultry, beekeeping, aquaculture, and so much more. Products in this sector are considered strategic as they can be processed into other items, garnering more profits.
Figures from the Ministry of Agriculture show the country has over 18 million hectares of arable land. That's land that can be farmed. Last year, nearly 130 million tons of agro products were produced on farmlands. The agro industry is worth billions. Data from the National Customs Administration show the value of agricultural exports rose by 8% last year. Figures show Iran exported roughly 7 million tons of agricultural products worth nearly $5 billion in the same period. Industry analysts say last year's exports declined compared to 2020, when the value was around $6 billion.
They say there are several reasons for this. One is a government ban on exports of certain agricultural products, such as potatoes and aubergine, to supply domestic demands. This year, however, the ban was lifted. Another reason for the decline in exports is said to be reduced production. This was because of the coronavirus pandemic and less than average annual rainfall, coupled with outdated farming practices. All things considered, this sector has a promising future, particularly with the development of new technology used for cultivation, harvest, and processing. Health is a crucial social and economic asset. It is seen as a cornerstone for human development and the expansion of any economy. It is also considered a fundamental human right. The medical device industry is a sector with the sole purpose of improving the quality of life of its customers. Moreover, it's a source of medical innovation with heavy regulations. As a result, a lot happens behind the scenes before medical devices are released into the market.
We will venture through Iran's medical sector while shining the spotlight on medical device production. We wanted to understand how this sector has grown over the years and uncover who the major players are in this field. Plus, we will look at this sector's contribution to society and the economy.
The capital city, Tehran, has been buzzing with multiple industry exhibits in recent weeks. One of the most anticipated exhibits is the Medical Laboratory Device Show, which drew a lot of participants this year. We visited the expo to see how this market is faring and check out some of the latest developments. We caught up with several companies holding pavilions at the exhibit. Virajin was one of them. It specializes in making machines and equipment used in labs for research and diagnosis. Many holding companies were also present at the show, along with their subsidiaries, who presented their products. But that's not all. The exhibit also provides a platform for getting to know what types of services these holding companies offer.
I should say that we are a holding company, including four different companies. The holding company name is Vista Padina, and the subsidiaries companies are Tubanegi, which is active in fields of molecular biology and life sciences for more than 25 years, and Arya Tashkis Pars, which is active in fields of the tubes for the blood collection from very well-known companies for more than 20 years, and they are one of the main suppliers of the tubes for the laboratories to collect the bloods for the tests. One of our companies is just for engineering and giving backups, after-sales service and backup for the instruments. And the other company is Sima Polymer, which they have the production line for the plastic wares for the laboratories in different applications.
Thousands and thousands of products were on display here, which are mainly used in medical laboratories. Some companies displayed consumable items used in labs like swabs or thinning liquids. Others produced diagnostic kits. It might be interesting to know that medical diagnostic kits used to be previously imported. However, now with the efforts of research-based firms, many of these items have been indigenized. We spoke with a company that not only has saved the country millions on imports, but also supports various knowledge-based startups.
Exhibits like this one are bustling with people. It's a place where downstream and upstream companies in the medical lab sector can gather and showcase their latest. It also is an excellent place for potential investors to scout out lucrative investment opportunities and check out the local competition.
So scores of companies participated in this exhibit this year.
Among these companies were knowledge-based manufacturers, startups, raw material suppliers, and much more. Visitors are given a chance to evaluate and discover the latest innovative products and solutions in the lab sector across all ranges. The exhibit has been put on hold since 2019 due to the coronavirus outbreak. Now it is in full swing again. Medical Laboratory Device Exhibit took place in Iran Mall. It is one of the biggest shopping centers in Iran that also offers an expansive space for trade shows. The coronavirus outbreak is subsiding nationwide due to the extensive vaccination campaign. And now, many businesses are enjoying in-person interactions through this exhibition once again. The goal of the Medical Lab Device Show is to further develop services and products used in clinical labs. It's a place where domestic and foreign participants can interact and strengthen networks. It also gathers medical industry participants, such as doctors and hospital owners, among many others in the healthcare trade. In addition, the expo is a platform where industry decision makers visit and where scores of business deals are closed.
The exhibition was coupled with a medical lab science and device conference. It was the 13th round of the international conference that was jointly held by the Medical Council and the Association of Clinical Laboratory Doctors. This was a significant event in the field of lab sciences aiming to improve lab services and technology.
Some 2,700 participants from various fields of lab sciences joined the event, either virtually or in person. The five-day conference included 25 specialized seminar panel meetings with international guest speakers among Iranian experts in the field. The purpose of the conference is to exchange scientific knowledge and bridge a dialogue between lab sciences and clinical disciplines. It was also a platform to check out the latest global tech that are being used to improve lab services. Many hot topics were discussed during the conference, such as lessons learned from the coronavirus outbreak. Other discussions revolved around the future of medical diagnostic labs and the technology that will shape them. Industry practitioners say medical lab sciences is one of the most overlooked sectors in the industry, yet it plays a crucial role in the medical sector. Some 70% of all diseases in society are diagnosed by the laboratory community. All disciplines of laboratory sciences, inducing lab specialists, pathologists, and clinicians, were at the forefront of the battle with the coronavirus. These specialists worked tirelessly around the clock to create diagnostic kits, treatments, and equipment needed to combat the disease.
Iran has taken giant strides in the health and medical sector over the past two decades. In fact, Iran's medical device market is growing faster than the world average. The country is globally ranked fourth for engineering over 1,000 medical devices to show for it too. Plus, this technological capacity has allowed the country to churn out advanced devices in the medical sector.
Out of the 1,000 active medical device manufacturers, nearly 230 of them are knowledge-based firms. These companies generate some 30% of revenues in the domestic medical device market. That's all based on figures from the Vice Presidential Office for Science and Technology. Going off of data from Iran's Medical Equipment Office of the Ministry of Health, over 2,000 different types of medical devices are domestically produced. All of these meet EU standardization requirements for sales. Also, statistics showed over half of the 500,000 medical devices made globally have Iranian versions, reducing imports by 10%. Iran also exports these items to over 50 countries worldwide, including Russia, Germany, and Italy, among others. The National Medical Device Directorate reported that back in 2018, this market was worth nearly $3 billion. The latest figures have not been made public yet, and this amount is likely much higher this year.
The surge in production in this sector is attributed to the hard work of knowledge-based firms and research institutions. Gas powers production, and oil greases the gears of the industry. Without gas and oil, most industries probably wouldn't thrive as they are today. The world consumes around 36 billion barrels of oil per year. Oil and gas are major industries in the energy market and play a significant role in the global economy as the world's primary fuel source. Meanwhile, the process and systems involved in producing and distributing oil and gas are highly complex. They require lots of money and state-of-the-art technology.
Well, it is that part of the show where I should take a break and pass the action over to my very good friend and colleague out there on the field. Take it away.
Metro stations, airports, and stadiums. These are places filled with crowds. So are places such as important military facilities, as well as places such as parliament or embassies. Now, these places are strategic, so their entrance and exits should be observed carefully. In order to do this, some certain equipment are installed in these places. Not only that, this will also facilitate, getting into these places and out of them, provide security. Also, it has an effect on hygiene. So, today we are at a company that produces a sort of equipment that is related to this. Stay with us and let's find out what they have here. Iranian companies used to import these systems from foreign countries in the past. However, this caused some sorts of problem for them. One of them was that whenever their systems needed fixing, it was very costly and time-consuming. Now, this company has provided the ground for long-term services and post-production services for all customers. That includes two-year guarantees for all customers, plus 10-year services for everyone. High quality and reasonable prices. That's the main feature of the products that are manufactured in this company. But why? Well, they can produce equipment with a very lower price compared to foreign models, because this is a knowledge-based company. From software to hardware, every nook and cranny of these machines is produced here in Iran. And this enables them to modify their equipment or to produce them in any way they want. And that's the key to their success. Turnstile gate is one of their products. It's designed to be used in stadiums. This company has developed an application for football fans. So what can they do? They can buy tickets online. Then the application gives them a QR code. So when they want to enter the stadium, they just show their QR code and then they go through this gate. Initially, when they designed this, until this company designed this, no other company had the experience of producing an equipment like this. And football clubs back then were forced to import it from foreign companies, and that was very expensive. So this company just understood the market's need and started designing this equipment at a very lower price, but a quality that can compete with foreign models. Today we have visited the first company to produce access control systems in Iran. Their key to success is high quality plus reasonable prices. That's it. So you might ask why. Well, they can produce these equipment from 0 to 100, from software to hardware, all in all, in Iran. And that's what makes them different from others. And that's what makes them stand out. Thank you for watching the show. This was Bazaar's report from this company. See you next time.
Many thanks for that awesome report. Well, we're almost out of time, but before we go, let's have a quick look at the news and trends in the food and agricultural industry. Agriculture and horticulture are two of the major areas which the Ministry of Science and Technology has dedicated support packages for. And these aid packages have paid off with new innovative services and products offered in 12 agricultural fields.
Some of these innovative services include creating online markets for buying and selling products, supplying inputs, and improving agricultural processes. Other technology has been created by knowledge-based companies that are now playing a colourful role in the agricultural value chain.
Farmers are going high-tech as dronology is becoming more common in the cultivation of various crops.
From crop spraying to gathering data, more and more farmers use drones to manage their plots. These flying machines also apply fertilizers, pollination, and even sow seeds in remote regions. Iran's agriculture ministry is encouraging the use of drones on farms by offering soft loans to farmers to help them pay for nearly 80% of purchasing costs.
Well, that's it for today. Don't forget to give us your feedback. And you can also share your thoughts and ideas with us via email. We always enjoy hearing from you. I'm Samson Sees. Sees you in the next Bazaar.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.